Hey everybody, it's Mike from the Mike Wagner Show, powered by SonicWeb Studios and brought to you by our official sponsor, the Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mia Molson's The Missing, available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. We're here with a terrific gentleman who's an award-winning author of 31 books on rivers, conservation, and the environment with 40 years experience based in Coos Bay, Oregon, in the south coast of the wonderful Northwest Pacific. He's an accomplished photographer with the most complete collaboration of photos of rivers in the U.S. He's also received his Bachelor of Science in Landscape Management or Architecture from Penn State University, worked as a land use planner, and also from 71 up to 1980, began writing the same year he exited, and also was involved with the Kings River, South Yuba River, the Great Rivers of the West, and also American Rivers, and also the River Network, and featured in the film Protected. And also he's got a new book, which is called Seek Higher Ground, the Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis. And y'all had some other war-winning books. We'll cover some of those live, ladies and gentlemen, of Plus Studios, somewhere along the river. Just kidding. He's on the beautiful Plus Studios in Coos Bay, Oregon. Rivers, Conservation, and the Environment, and also the new book, Seek Higher Ground, the Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis. Ladies and gentlemen, the multi-talented Tim Palmer. Tim, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Mike, I'm thrilled to be with you here.
Well, it's great to have you on board. Nice to see you just came back from the river to be on the show. So I like to take a trip one day and get on the river. So, and of course, we're going to be on the river right here, the river of what we're doing. You're an award-winning author, 31 books on rivers, conservation, and the environment, 40 years experience. You're an accomplished photographer with the most complete collection of photographs of rivers in the U.S., and you also received your Bachelor of Science in Landscape Architecture from Penn State University. You worked as a land use planner from 71 and up until 1980, began writing that same year. You're involved with the Kings River, also South Yuba, Great Rivers of the West, the American Rivers, and also the River Network, and also featured in one of the films Protected. And you also had a couple of books. You had the Great America's Great Forest Trails, Mountain Trails, Rivers Journey, and a lot more. But here we're to seek higher ground, the natural solution to our urgent flooding crisis. And before getting all that, Tim, tell us how you first got started.
Well, on this book, Mike, Seek Higher Ground, the Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis, I was actually a flood victim. In get this, 1972, you know, wow. Time flies when you
yeah, time flies when you have fun. I totally forgot about that. I don't know if it's a fun, but yeah, time flies for sure. So
anyway, I lived in a tiny Appalachian village along a tributary to the West Branch of the Susquehanna River in north central Pennsylvania. And Tropical Storm Agnes had brewed in the Caribbean and blown up the southeast coast and drifted offshore. And everyone took a big sigh of relief, but then it turned around and came back again.
Ooh.
Freshly renewed with a lot of ocean moisture.
Wow.
And it hovered over north central Pennsylvania, over my home, for 3 days. And the flood that resulted at the time was the most damaging flood in American history. It's been eclipsed many times over since then by bigger floods, but it was the most damaging one at the time. I lived at ground zero. The house I was in almost flooded. The water creeped up to the very top step of the first floor and stopped, fortunately. Mm. But my neighbors were hit really hard. I ended up helping them. We were totally isolated in this little town. The National Guard brought us food for a week in helicopters. Bridges were out, landslides were down, water was raging. We were stuck there, you know, just helping each other to survive. But as soon as the water did recede and the roads opened, I hustled out and returned to my job, which was working as the environmental planner for Lycoming County in Pennsylvania. And there, my duty was not only to help figure out how to respond to the ongoing crisis, but more importantly, how to consider how we could avoid such a catastrophic loss in the future. What do we need to do differently to avoid having the same problem happen again and again and again? And of course, now we know that it has happened again and again and again, because we've not done the correct things to prepare ourselves. And now, in addition to all of that kind of grim history that we have, the floods are getting worse, and they're going to get way worse. The floods of tomorrow will dwarf the floods of today. So that's what we are up against. And, you know, we can talk about what we did wrong, what we did right, what we need to change to, however you want to proceed with this, Mike.
And I was thinking about the time that you mentioned about some of the things, what went wrong, how can we correct and everything else. And then, and, you know, back in the day, you had independent agencies that were handling floods. Now it's being all done by FEMA. And do you think FEMA is doing its job? Is it doing a better job, or is it doing worse when it comes to handling floods?
Well, you know, it's, of course, a mixed bag. You know, FEMA is a big federal agency. The one of its principal tasks is to administer the National Flood Insurance Program. This is not the Army Corps of Engineers that builds the dams and most of the levees. You know, this is not local government, which is in charge of land use planning. This is a federal agency, and a principal job of theirs is to administer the insurance program. Now, the insurance program was conceived in the 50s and 60s. It was amended and upgraded in 1973. The basic idea of it was that a lot of people, through no real fault of their own, happen to live on floodplains. They're stuck there. They cannot afford flood insurance because the insurance industry is very well informed, and they know that floods are not a good way to a good operating system. They can't make money on floods. They're way too damaging. You know, we all have fire insurance. You wouldn't own a home really without fire insurance.
Yeah, fire insurance, earthquakes, acts of God, and I think there's also vandalism and some of the others. But the flood insurance seems to be very tricky, and like how would I call it, just like a real sticking point, thorn on the side or something like that. It's somewhere along those lines. It's like nobody wants to talk about it.
So to compensate for that, the federal government adopted a program of subsidized insurance, and it was a terrific bargain on paper. The deal was that the government would subsidize insurance for people who are already on the floodplain, provided, however, that local governments would zone the floodplains that are not developed so that the problem doesn't become worse and worse. Terrific plan approach. I was a planner. I speak for many, I think, when I say we thought we had solved a lot of the flood problem at that point. But unfortunately, it didn't turn out that way. It was principally of the influence of the development industries, banking, real estate, home building. The regulations that followed were watered down. They remained somewhat meaningless in a lot of cases. The mapping of floods was inadequate. The prediction of the floods was not well informed. And so by having subsidized insurance, we actually created a great example of the law of unintended consequences. And that is because the taxpayer is now standing behind the risk of flood damage, we've actually encouraged more development on floodplains instead of less.
Really? Why is that trend having more land, more houses, more buildings on floodplains instead of away from it? It's like, I don't understand that logic at all.
Yeah, it's a totally good question. But that, but you know, in the short term, it appears to be a good economic deal to people, because floodplain land is cheaper than non-floodplain land frequently, for a good reason. It floods, and you're exposed to dangers and hazards and even risk of life. But, you know, for people who are looking for a home to buy, and I was once one of these people, I considered buying the cabin of my dreams along the Rogue River in Oregon. Met with a realtor there. I said, is this prone to flood damage? It didn't quite pass my eyeball test as a planner, and the negotiation didn't quite pass my sniff test here. The realtor said, yeah, it'll never flood again because they built a dam upstream.
Really?
Well, I went straight to the county planning office, looked up the maps, and sure enough, I was squarely in the floodplain hazard zone. You know, just waiting for what we now on the West Coast call an atmospheric river with my name on it. So I didn't buy that cabin, but somebody did, and they probably had no idea it flooded. So, but to the insurance program, because we have federally subsidized insurance, taking some of the risk away, we've actually encouraged more development instead of less. They're very sensible, economic, doable reforms to this. And, you know, we can outline some of those if you want. But unfortunately, because of the political paralysis in our nation's capital today, you know, it's been very difficult to implement those reforms.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the realtor as well, too, saying that no problem, you're safe and everything. Do you think that realtor could have been liable back then? Like, you know, nowadays, a realtor would say that they'd be liable. Do you think that realtor could have been liable back then or get away with it?
No, they would get away with it. I mean, you know, that's the way the deals are done all the time. That brings up, however, and one of the simple solutions I'm talking about that would go a long way towards solving part of the problem, to require disclosure of flood risk in real estate sales. They're not required to disclose that now. So she's not going to get into any trouble for misleading me on that. But there should be a national disclosure law so that people buying a property know what the hazards are. They're only state laws, and only half the states have any disclosure laws at all, and most of those are extremely ineffective. And so that's one of the simplest reforms we could make. You know, we require that a deed search be done when a property is sold, so that the buyer knows that they're actually buying, you know, from the legitimate seller. But we protect the buyers in the case of flooding, which is a much more serious hazard.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of flood insurance as well, too, do you think it's gotten better over time? Do you think it's gotten worse? Is it the same? And of course, if you're in charge of the flood program, like say you got elected on the White House Council, either by Biden, Trump, or whoever's going to be president, what changes would you make in regards to the flood insurance program?
Yeah, well, a couple questions there, Mike. The first is, has it gotten better or worse? You know, it started out bad because nobody bought flood insurance. And then, as I mentioned, in 1973, the act was bolstered to require federal flood insurance for any more federally backed mortgage, which are almost all home sales. So that was a big step forward. Then we had the big flood of 1993. Do you remember that? I mean, this was big in the Dakotas, in Minnesota, you know, all over the Midwest.
Okay, it depends on what river it is, because I remember I was in Chicago and I was working for a hotel chain. I was in audiovisual, part of assistant management. And of course, you see in the golf course, you know, they got all kinds of sports, but they had that one TV on there, which had the Red River that was flooding Grand Forks. And, you know, one of the questions I had, it's like, you can probably answer before we get to Grand Forks. And, you know, why does the river, you'll go upstream instead of downstream? I guess that was a question I wonder. It's like, why does it, you know, go up towards Grand Forks, you know, moving up instead of going down south like a typically
does? It probably got backed up by a bigger river downstream. But back to back to my point about FEMA here and the insurance program, the 93 flood was called the Great Flood of American history throughout much of the Mississippi Basin. And because of that, the insurance program and FEMA's role was bolstered and increased and improved. And President Clinton actually had a very good appointment to the head of FEMA. There was real progress made. The buyout program to pay people who were willing to move, you know, totally willing seller basis, no condemnation here, but thousands of people wanted to move up out of the floodplain. There was a lot of federal money allocated for that. Mm-hmm. Gradually, over the years that followed and the several decades that followed, the memory of that flood kind of receded, and we sort of got back to the old modus of, you know, not having good regulation and not appropriating a lot of money for buyouts and relocation. So then the effectiveness of the program actually got worse.
Okay. Do you think with Biden in charge, or possibly soon to be in charge with Trump, do you think would there be any enforcement or any improvement or anything, or has it been just pretty much ignored under the current administration or possibly the next administration?
No, not totally. Not, no, it has not been ignored. In fact, the Biden administration has improved the program in many ways. And okay. Again, with an excellent head of FEMA running the show here. And, you know, the agency's been criticized in many ways, but they also have some excellent reforms going on now. For the first time in 20 years, FEMA is reconsidering a whole suite of rules that apply to this program, including the baseline consideration of the baseline flood as a 100-year event. Mm-hmm. Right now, most of the floodplain regulations are based on a flood that has a 1% chance of occurring in any given year. It's called a 100-year floodplain.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the very long term, it's only likely that that land would flood once in 100 years.
That's
not nearly enough. You know, over the years, FEMA has not upgraded that. We've discovered that floods occur way more often than that mapping shows because a lot of the data they were using was inadequate. Now we have climate change. The floods are getting way worse. That has not been factored in. So we need to change that baseline to something more like a 500-year flood. And FEMA is now considering that kind of reform, as well as reforms on how much you pay for flood insurance. All these years, people have been paying into the program, but the worst cases for damage are called repetitive loss properties. That's where people get flooded again and again and again. And every time the taxpayer bails them out, there are properties that are worth that were worth $40,000, where they've collected $400,000 of taxpayer subsidies to wow. rebuild as many as 20 times. This is crazy. You know, this is insanity. Canada has a much more sensible program. In Ontario, if you get flooded, the government will pay you $100,000 up to $100,000 once.
And then okay. So basically it's $100,000, that's it. And if you get flooded again, it's almost like, you know.
Yeah.
Like that. Okay.
You've been warned, you know, you should do something else.
It's somehow that people have abused it over the years. And, you know, think about Grand Forks, where it's like, you know, down in New Orleans, obviously Hurricane Katrina, they sit there, wait until the National Guard comes in, gets help. Nobody did anything up in Grand Forks. You know, the big news, everybody would laugh at the time, you know, that, you know, how could Grand Forks, get flooded? The river goes up and everything else. But then the reports had it that in 9 months or less than a year in general, Grand Forks was back and running again. And the simplest solution was that they didn't have to wait for the guard. They have to wait for FEMA, wait for anybody from an agency. Basically, it was just the residents, the townspeople, and city government. They all got together and simply took care of the floods themselves. And if I'm correct, that every nation in the world or every city took up the Grand Forks plan.
Well, we certainly need to take personal responsibility for a lot of these decisions, you know, and where we buy a house, where we build a house, and how we protect ourselves from flood damage. But a lot of people fall into this unfortunate circumstance of having few choices or mm-hmm. having already been there to no fault of their own. And they're the people who need insurance, but it should be an effective, equitable program that puts us on a path towards solving the problem and not just continually paying out losses again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that, like along the floodplain, do you think maybe building like, you know, something like of higher ground, maybe building like, you know, something on a hill, or maybe I've seen places where it's like, you know, it looks like they're stacked like Legos that go up and up with the concrete blocks, the structure. You have to, you know, walk like 50 steps up just to, avoid the flood. Do you think some kind of change like that would be required, like say maybe I don't know, a 50-foot foundation rising up, or maybe just building more dirt or something, concrete, something like that, you know, being down here but up here or something?
These kind of approaches are what you might call quote flood proofing, and I put quotes around that because it's really hard to actually flood proof a place. And there are a lot of problems doing what you describe here, Mike. For example, the idea of piling up dirt and fill to get you above the flood level, that's cogently called fill and build.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good idea because, for one thing, all that dirt you put in the floodplain to build your house on top of pushes the floodwaters elsewhere. And that means you're pushing them onto your neighbors.
Mm.
So other people build nearby, you know, their floods suddenly get way worse because you've built your building up. Mm. And even if you do elevate a home and, you know, so the first floor stays dry, there are a multitude of other flooding problems that remain to be dealt with, you know, like disease after the flood, like backup of sewer, like lack of water supply for days or weeks or months, like inaccessible roads. We have the problems of safety of first responders helping people evacuate because they think they're safe, but they are not. We have the problem of floating logs and whole floating homes and mobile homes mm-hmm. that crash into other homes that were, quote, flood-proofed. So that's not a good solution. You know, my bottom line here, Mike, if I can just back up and summarize a bit here, is that we've counted way too much on building dams as an attempt to keep floods from occurring and building levees as an attempt to keep floods away from our houses and homes, and way too much on relief where we pay for the damage over and over again, and not nearly enough attention on protecting open space that remains on floodplains and should not be developed. Turns out 90% of the floodplain in America is not heavily developed. The problem could get nine times worse than it is if we allowed development there. Those lands should be protected as open space because we don't want to have the problem of getting worse before we start making it better. The second part of my solution here that I'm really advocating for is to help people to relocate away from the floodplain, be done with the problem, get away, move up to higher ground, convert that land into parks and open space and public areas that are valued and cherished by everyone for the wildlife habitat, for parkland, for recreation, for trails, and have everybody in a much safer situation as a result.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it may take like moving up to mountains or anything like that. And because I guess some of the questions I'll wonder, it's like, you know, where are they going to move? And you say that a good portion is with floodplains and everything else. I guess the question is, you know, like, what are some floodproof areas? And of course, you know, people would move, and it's also where it'll just drive up tax dollars. Cost of living may go up, and, you know, some of those factors too. So it's kind of one of those things I'm just thinking about it, that, you know, it would be nice, but then people move, it's like, you know, where essentially would they go? Or like the less fortunate, it's like, yeah, you're stuck.
Let me give you another number here, Mike. 7% of America is considered flood hazard land. That means 93% is not. Now, not all of that 90%, 3% is suitable for building, but a lot of it is. And a lot of it is way more suitable than the 7% where you're going to be causing these massive private and public costs and putting people at risk of life if you have more development there. So there are other places to go. Unfortunately, they cost more than what many people who are unfortunate now living on floodplains can afford. And that's why we need effective public programs to help them move. The bright side of this story is that there are excellent programs that are doing that. For example, Nashville, Tennessee has a really happening relocation buyout program where they have money, they raise money through a levy on local water bills, plus they get federal and state money. They bought out 400 homes on the floodplain in the city and metro area of Nashville alone. Tulsa, Oklahoma has a great program for relocation. Charlotte, North Carolina has a great program to do this. So the buyout solution is being pursued with great success. But let me give you two more numbers here. For the Natural Resources Defense Council cranked thousands of data points, and they determined that for every $1.70 that the federal government spends helping people move away from flood hazards and be done with the problem, we as taxpayers spend $100 helping them stay where they'll be flooded again. There's something wrong with that, you know? And so, you know, they help them stay by paying subsidies for the insurance, by the relief payouts, by the subsidized money to rebuild roads, bridges, water lines, all this, you know, massive costs that the taxpayers are footing to cover these bills. And not that we shouldn't be doing some of that, but the ratio should be more likely reversed, in my opinion. You know, we should be helping people get away from the problem and be finished with it more than we should be encouraging them to stay.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the dams and levees as well, too, where there's too many dams and levees being built, causing floods and all that. And do you think the dams and levees were a good idea in the first place? Maybe just a few, but then it started growing like weeds, became a problem?
Yeah. Well, again, it's a complicated question, Mike. Now, you know, the Army Corps built 400 major flood control dams across America, and they built 30,000 miles of levees, and they're like 100,000 miles of levees total, not counting tiny little ones that farmers, you know, put up all the time. So we've had this massive effort, you know, to build. And in spite of that, flood damages have continued to grow. You know, almost every year, flood damage is worse. Even in spite of all the billions we spent trying to not have that be the case. So clearly something is wrong with our approach here. And, you know, as I identify and describe, you know, the history of this issue, you know, the principal reason is we have not taken seriously the job of protecting floodplains that are undeveloped and helping people move up where they can. Not everybody can move. You know, maybe I said it before, but the Sacramentos, the Memphises, you know, the Portland, Oregons of the world have levees and people are going to stay there. And those kinds of cities are going to be able to afford the levee that it takes to keep them safe. But most people and most land behind levees are not going to be able to do that because the floods are getting worse. The 1993 flood I mentioned, 1,000 out of 1,500 major levees in the Mississippi Basin were overtopped or breached in that one flood. So, you know, it's kind of like investing all your money in a bank because it pays you 2% interest per year. But then in 20 years, the bank goes broke and you lose all your money. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of what we've done by depending on dams and levees. They protect us from the small and medium-sized floods, but not the big ones.
Mm-hmm. It also made me think of New Orleans as well, too, with that Hurricane Katrina and flooding Mississippi, things breaking down. And of course, although the problem is someone fixing New Orleans, do you think New Orleans is going to, you know, be cured of that, or are they going to face that same problem again, especially where they're at? And I was reading an article where it's like it's actually sinking lower and lower to below sea level.
Yeah, you know, New Orleans is one of the toughest cases of all. You know, it's the only major city in the world built on a delta that is sinking. And it's sinking more because all the dams upstream throughout the entire Mississippi Basin collect silt and prevent that from washing out to the Gulf of Mexico, which over the millennia had compensated for the land subsidence there. There's always new silt coming in on top of the old, but that's not the case anymore. And so, you know, New Orleans is sort of beyond me in this book. I'm looking at much more the typical situation of river flooding throughout the United States, you know, which about 99% of it is.
Mm-hmm. And certainly indeed as well, too. Of course, not all rivers are bad, but a lot of rivers are good. You took a lot of photographs on it. You have a lot of, you know, collection of photos, and you got some books on it as well, too, and a bit more on Seek Higher Ground with author Tim Palmer. But first, listen to The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com, powered by SonicWeb Studios. Visit online at sonicwebstudios.com for all your needs. Look at a professional website without breaking your budget. SonicWeb Studios is the answer. SonicWeb Studios offers fast, affordable custom web designs that blow the competition away. Call today, 1-800-303-3960. That's 1-800-303-3960. Or email to support at sonicwebstudios.com. Mention the Mike Wagner Show, get 20% off your first project. Sonic Web Studios, take your image to the next level. Also, time to give official shout-out to our official sponsor, the Mike Wagner Show, international war-winning author Mia Molson-Zia. If you love fast-paced mysteries, you'll love Missing by Mia Molson-Zia, available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. Missing is fast-paced and intriguing with an unforgettable twist. It takes place in four countries, two strangers, one target, where truth is illusion and those who love you to first go missing. It's available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. Missing by Mia Molson-Zia has garnered great reviews. And Eve 11 endorsed by Howard celebrities, including Joanna Cassidy, Forge Riley, and Minos. So grab your copy today for Girls Missing by Mia Molson-Zia, available on Amazon. Also, check out The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com on our 40 podcast platforms. Heard in 100 countries, including Facebook, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Also, Podbean, BitChute, Rumble. Make sure you subscribe along with them. YouTube, also Apple, Odyssey, and more. Make sure you take us with you on any mobile device. And for great gift ideas, go to Amazon.com. Check out the Mike Weidner Show podcast. T-shirts, pop sockets, throw pillows, tote bags, hoodies. Makes great gifts 24/7. Go to Amazon.com. Check out the Mike Weidner Show podcast. And for more great gift ideas, go to Amazon.com/MiaMolsonZia for great books like Missing, Once and Wrinkles. Also T-shirts, pop sockets, hoodies, phone cases, and some more. Amazon.com/MiaMolsonZia. Check it out today and support the Mike Weidner Show on Anchor FM, PayPal, and themikeweidnershow.com. We're here with the award-winning author of 31 books on rivers, conservation, and the environment, 40 years experience, author Tim Palmer on the Mike Weidner Show. Seek Higher Ground, the natural solution to our urgent flooding crisis. And of course, you know, we cover some of the things on the rivers, insurance and everything. Of course, not all rivers are really that bad. In fact, rivers are beautiful. You've got just about the complete collection of photographs of rivers throughout the U.S. You've been taking pictures of rivers for God knows how long.
Yeah, most of my life, Mike. Hey, let me just address this thing of the good river and the bad river. You know, there's a whole different side of the flood coin here. Mostly what we hear about regarding floods is mayhem and destruction, you know, and it's awful and our hearts go out to the victims and so forth. But, you know, floods have been occurring since the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. They are part of the hydrologic cycle. Water evaporates over the oceans. It blows over the mountains. It rains. The water runs back to sea, sometimes in very large amounts. This has happened since day one on Earth. It's the way nature works.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, natural systems have evolved to accommodate floods. And so floods are not only inevitable in the natural world, they are essential and beneficial. It's floods that cover the floodplain with water that sinks into the ground, into our groundwater supplies, which serve half the population of America with drinking water. Mm-hmm. So if you like drinking water, you got to like floods.
It's also good with coffee as well, too. So
totally. Yes, exactly. And, you know, floods, fish love floods. I mean, you might not think so, but floods are what shape the riverbed into a very healthy form. The hydrologists call this morphology. The riffle and pull sequence is essential for the life of the river because riffles aerate the water and pulls provide deep water. Those are all formed in floods.
Hmm.
Overflowing floods bring fish to rearing areas on the floodplain where the food supply is enhanced. So if you like fish, you got to like floods.
You know something too, there's a lot of people out there that love fishing and I'm one of them. And I got to say this, it's a good time to have a flood, good time to have a blizzard, have a snow melt. We had 100 inches last year in Bismarck, North Dakota, and we got fruitful plains. And yeah, fishing, I'm sure, is going to be back, especially after 2 years of droughts.
Yeah. So, you know, floods are essential to the way nature works. The problem is we've built so much infrastructure in their way. Mm-hmm. And so we need to protect floodplains that remain and help people move away from them, danger zone, when we can.
Mm-hmm. And certainly as well, too, you took photographs of rivers throughout the U.S. You have a collection, and, you know, there's some of the more obvious ones. And what are some more beautiful rivers that you've, you know, taken as well, too? Or maybe perhaps the more unusual rivers?
Wow, Mike, that's, I love all rivers. You know, you've asked me the toughest question you could. So I often answer my favorite river is the one where I live. And right now that's the Elk River in Oregon. It's 3 miles from my home here. It's this fabulous little coastal stream that comes out of the mountains, flows into the Pacific Ocean. It's only 40 miles long. But it's mm-hmm. a total, salmon are still returning to that stream from the ocean. You know, another one of the ones that I really love is the Salmon River of Idaho. It's the longest undammed river in America outside Alaska.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that. The river of my youth and really my formative years was the Susquehanna in Pennsylvania. You know, the biggest river on the East Coast and with tributaries like Pine Creek, the one where I lived during the big flood in 1972. You know, fabulous stream draining the Appalachian Mountains out and forming the major water source of Chesapeake Bay.
Mm-hmm.
You see, You know, I have whole books that deal with this, Mike. You know, a book called Rivers of America and a book called America's Great River Journeys. And believe me, I have a lot of favorites here, and they are all really worth protecting and worth caring about and worth learning about.
Mm-hmm. And of course, 31 books as well, too, including America's Great Forest Trails, also Mountain Trails, Rivers Journeys, and also Twilight of the Hemlocks. And also, I like this one, California Glaciers. And here's one I had a little tough time pronouncing before I got on. Was it Yogyakarta? Yogyakarta. Did I get that right?
No, Mike. Yogyakarta.
Yogyakarta.
It's in Pennsylvania.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was the most floated whitewater in America in the 1980s. You know, this fabulous Appalachian stream where my ancestors happened to move to and get this, 1787.
Wow.
I had deep roots there. And so it was a real joy to go back and write a book about this river, you know, many years later as I became an adult.
Mm-hmm. And certainly do as well, too. And of course, you know, of the 31 books, and maybe if you want to highlight a few that I haven't mentioned, feel free to do so.
Well, you know, I do guidebooks also. You know, I write books about big issues like flooding and river conservation and forest management. But I also do guidebooks. I've done a field guide to California rivers, a field guide to rivers of the Rocky Mountains. And I'm now starting work on a book called Field Guide to Washington Rivers, to the amazing rivers estate in Washington, what the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those are a few. My favorite book of all is called Pacific High Adventures in the Coast Ranges from Baja to Alaska. My wife and I spent 9 months traveling in our van from Baja, Mexico to Kodiak Island, Alaska. And the book highlights everything we got to see and do along the way. And I really featured people along the way who were becoming better attached to their place and taking some responsibility for those places and you know, in the care of them for the future. So it was a really, really fun book to write and, you know, and just a story I really wanted to tell.
Makes me want to go to the Baja River. And of course, you know, make sure you have the flood insurance and everything. And most importantly, take care of it.
That's right. Yeah, we've got to take care of these places. You know, we're blessed with this planet that we live on. And too often though, we don't act like we should. You know, we're not taking care of it. We're not recognizing its values and its vulnerabilities. And now in the age of the heating climate, you know, many of the problems are becoming more and more severe. That's actually when I wrote the flood book when I did. And, mm-hmm. and that's that, you know, I knew we had these problems with flooding ever since I experienced my big flood 50 years ago. But now the problems are getting worse. Up till now, we've kind of been largely in a state of denial about the difficulties here. That's not going to work anymore because the problems are going to be way more severe in the future. We're simply going to have to come to terms for some of these inequities, for some of the economic problems that result in the way we've chosen to deal with floods. We've simply got to strike a different path here.
Right. And of course, too, you go with the River Network as well, too, and American Rivers. You were involved with the Kings River, South Yuba, Great Rivers West. I think we cover that. And also featured in the film Protected as well.
That's right. Yeah. You can see all that on my website, Mike. Sure.
Okay. And what's the website?
www.timpalmer.org.
Timpalmer.org. And where can we find your book at?
Well, you can find it in bookstores, I hope. If you don't, any bookstore could order it. And I love supporting independent bookstores. You know, they're wonderful amenities to our communities. We should support the people who are running those businesses. So I always recommend people go to a bookstore. You can also buy the book online. You know, you can get it through Amazon or whatever. And you can get it through the publisher, the University of California Press. So, you know, there are different ways to buy the book.
Okay, and do you have the book on you by any chance so we could see it?
Oh, yeah. I thought you'd never ask.
You know something? I think there you is. Should. That's Seek Higher Ground. And once again, where can we find your book at?
Well, you can find it in bookstores or ask them to order it, or you can find it online. Just, you know, just type in the title of my name, Seek Higher Ground, Tim Palmer, and it'll pop up.
All right, we'll certainly do that. What's coming up for author Tim Palmer, Seek Higher Ground? We'll find out in just 1 minute. You listen to The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com, powered by Sonic Web Studios, and brought to you by official sponsor of The Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mia Molson-Zamm. We'll be back with author Tim Palmer of Seek Higher Ground after this time. We're back to award-winning author 31 books, Tim Palmer on The Mike Wagner Show with Seek Higher Ground. It's been great having you on. And there's one thing I forgot to ask. What do you want readers to learn from the book, Seek Higher Ground, and any final thoughts on it?
Well, that's an interesting question too, Mike. Let me make 2 points there to back up to, you know, to the big universe here. And that is that the story of flooding is really one of policy and politics. It's one of people and culture. It's one of economics and ecology, of engineering, of equity. It's really a story about life in America in the year 2024, you know, with many of the problems and difficulties that we all face. A lot of that comes into focus through this microcosm of flooding and rivers. And I would also make the point that the most fundamental part of the problem here is that as human creatures, we have tended to regard the laws of nature as optional, when in fact they are absolute.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we tend to regard our own laws and habits and policies as absolute, when in fact we can change them whenever we have the collective will to do so. In our minds, we have perfectly reversed the way the world actually works.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere is that discrepancy seen more effectively and more cogently than in flooding, you know, which, you know, is the natural cycle. It's the natural way that it happens. We're going to have floods forever. You can't stop the rain. You can't stop the water from rising. But we can stop how we deal with that, and we can stop building in the path of damage, and we can, you know, we can take a better approach to how we actually cope with this problem. And that's what I really make the case for doing in this book.
And certainly good job as well, too. And what else can we expect in 2024 and beyond, Tim?
Well, you mean from flooding or from me?
Just anything in general. You know, beyond 2024, 25, 26, or, yeah. Or what other thought just takes us out in general, so.
Yeah, what's the future going to bring? You're asking me to have a crystal ball here.
or get somebody to build an ark, too. You never know. It could be a much more newer model than what Norm made back in the day.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we can expect more floods. Hey, you know, let's stick to the theme of the book here. We're going to have floods forever, and we can expect floods that are going to be worse. They're mm-hmm. going to be longer lasting. They're going to be more intense. They're going to be more widespread. We got to get ready for that. You know, we have to recognize the age of denial is over. So that's what I see coming here. I see also, you know, a period of great political strife.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
It's difficult to do something as simple as, you know, I talked about the repeated flood damage thing, how the government keeps paying out for flood damage over and over again. That should be an easy problem to fix, mm-hmm. but it's not. Because Congress can't agree on anything.
Not even what to have on pizza, too. That's how divided it is.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, so I foresee, you know, there's. So what that means is I think, you know, we have to take more individual responsibility. We need to participate more effectively with our local government. Local governments are the ones that deal with these flooding issues. This is where the rubber hits the road. And everybody can become more engaged in their local level of government and participate there to bring some sense into that sphere also, so that, you know, local decisions aren't just run by the developers who are in a place to benefit, you know, from development, even if it's going to get flooded again and again. So, you know, I see a future where people need to participate, and, you know, a future where it becomes more and more important, mainly because of the climate change and the flooding problem getting more severe. It means that we all have to engage in forming the kind of future that we really need.
And definitely very important as well. So if you're in a floodplain area, do something about the problem right now, guys. Don't wait till it happens, or, you know, call the government as well. Take action right now, guys. And just a couple more things, Tim. Who do you consider biggest influence in your career?
Well, in my career, you know, the authors, I've read books by many different authors that made compelling cases for reforming how we live. And I've been heavily influenced by that. And I was heavily influenced by one of my first employers. I told you I was a county planner.
Mm-hmm.
My boss at the time had a very special ability to sniff out problems and to look for solutions that were fair and equitable, effective for everybody. And that was a big influence on me. And so those are a couple of things, you know, but for, you know, I've always felt I've been on an independent path. Mike, the reason why this may be difficult for me to answer is, you know, much of my life has been based on a path that I've struck out on my own and kind of created my own future. And, you know, I'm a big believer in that we're each in control of our own destiny, and it's our responsibility to do something worthwhile in this life.
I think that's a really good point you made as well, too. Not many people do that, and we applaud trailblazers like you guys. And what's the best advice you can give to anybody at this point? Just anything in general.
Well, I would say become involved in the big issues of our time. You know, we all have we're scrambling to make our own lives work, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also need to be concerned about the big things that are affecting our community. You know, my wife is on the city council here where I live. She spends most of her time as a volunteer working on the big issues of our community. We're fortunate that we can afford to do that, you know, and that we have the time and the ability and all to do that. But I would encourage everybody to engage in your place and in its future. You know, many people, I think, you know, are kind of lost today because it's become such a self-centered society.
Right, yeah.
It's when we go beyond that, you know, I've done it here in 2 years of work on this book, you know, talking about the flood issue and what we need to do differently. You know, that's just my approach, but there are many approaches to engaging in the big issues of our time and engaging in problems and possibilities that are bigger than ourselves. And when we do that, I think that we are rewarded in big ways, you know, just for being alive today. So I would encourage people to become involved in the important things that affect you and your community.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really true, too. It's like just get out of your little crystal ball, whatever it is, your little bubble, and get involved. I think that's a really good point you made, Tim. So we're here with author Tim Palmer of Seek Higher Ground, the natural solution to our urgent flooding crisis here on the Mike Wagner Show. Tim, a very big thank you for your time. You've been absolutely fantastic. Learned a lot from you. Looking forward to having you again soon. Keep us up to date. Keep in touch. We'd love to have you back. Once again, what's your website? How do people contact you? Where can people purchase or check out your book and your other books?
I'm sorry, you asked for my website, Mike?
Website, how do people contact you, and where can you find your book?
The website is www.timpalmer.org, and you can find the books there and other information about me. Mike, it's been a total blast being with you here today, so thank you for the time, for sharing your time with me.
And thank you as well, too, and of course, a big thank you for your time. And by the way, show us the book again before we go.
Here it is.
There you go. Seek Higher Ground with Tim Palmer on the Mike Wagner Show. A very big thank you for your time. You've been absolutely amazing. Looking forward to having you soon. Keep us up to date. Keep in touch. Live at it back. We wish you all best. And Tim, you definitely have a great future, have you?
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. Bye-bye.